Hello and welcome to the Coaching in Education podcast series. I'm Lee Hatcher in a Skype conversation with Chris Munro. Chris is a senior consultant with Growth Coaching International and is based in Victoria. He has extensive experience in supporting and leading the development of teachers and school leaders, over 25 years of working in government and independent schools and in higher education. As you'll no doubt pick up from his accent, he's originally from Scotland, where he began his teaching career and performed advisory roles for education authorities there. He came to Australia in 2010. Chris is going to deal with this question. So what happens after the workshop, when you move from learning about coaching and how to do it to actually enacting it in your local context?
I now know that I actually was having coach-like conversations or coaching-like conversations in my various professional roles long before I actually had a name for it.
Yeah.
My formal training and reading and work around coaching in recent years has helped me to see that the best conversations I was having with my school colleagues and then latterly with beginning teachers and during my time in initial teacher education were actually successful kind of by accident because I was using some coaching skills and techniques at the time. So throughout my career, I developed a particular interest in teacher development and adult learning. And the first formal learning that I did around coaching in schools was with Jim Knight from Kansas University, much cited and lauded expert in instructional coaching. And he was running a workshop at a conference in Melbourne about 5 years ago. And the title of that professional learning was called Professional Learning That Honours the Professionalism of Teachers. And it was that honours the professionalism of teachers, but I thought, well, I like the sound of that.
Yes.
You know, and my professional learning role at the time, that was the hook for me. That was something different, you know, and that was my in.
Chris, can I ask you what it did for you? I know it's not about you, but what does this do for you in how you were drawn to it?
Part of what resonated in that early learning was this notion of a partnership.
Yes.
In learning and development. It was development that was based around the conversations that we have, and I will be say a bit more about that later, but it was the conversational aspect of it, I think, that really resonated. It was about a very respectful, professionalising approach to professional learning, and as an experienced teacher and leader, I knew that's what felt right for me and felt good for me, but often that didn't happen in the forms of professional learning that prevailed in schools.
Yes. School it's basically do to others as you'd have them do to you.
Yes.
Now, you've had numbers of first-hand experiences of implementing coaching in school, and you now work with many others striving to do the same. What would you say are some of the starting points for coaching in education, Chris?
This is a conversation that I have increasingly with school leaders and teachers in my new role, or my role with GCI now, and what I find there a very helpful starting point is something called the Global Framework for Coaching in Education, and that's been developed by Christian Van Nieuwenberg and John Campbell, and it's based on their vast experience of working in coaching in education, and they describe four portals or entry points for coaching in education as starting points. So that's often what I use as a point of reference for starting points.
Okay.
And I'll maybe just say a very brief bit about each of those. I mean, I don't want to talk about the global framework as such there, and people like Christian and John talk about it much more eloquently than I would. But in summary, we are talking about, let's start with professional practice, which is really about teaching practice as one of the portals. And that's really where I came to it, was around teacher professional learning, teacher-to-teacher collaboration and goal setting and thinking and talking about the practice and maybe some observation in there. And what we're really talking about is the conversational context within that portal was around teacher practice. If we look at the educational leadership portal, we're talking about how coaching can be helpful in the range of conversational contexts that leaders have. And that might be performance review and development. It might be their own leadership skills and so on. And then the other two portals that are covered in the model are often less well developed, but increasingly so in emerging areas. And we're talking about student success and well-being there, possibly students as coaches, certainly teachers using coaching approaches in their developmental and goal setting and academic conversations that they have with students. And that coaching, we're realizing, can be a very helpful approach there as well.
Yes.
And then the last one that they talk about in the model is community engagement. And that's probably the least developed, but in my work and thinking around coaching cultures, it's maybe the area that starts to emerge later. And it's when people realize the power of these kinds of conversations and how they can utilize coaching skills and coaching approaches to improve the quality of conversations. And the other context there is with parents, with wider community groups, school boards. And what I would encourage schools to do in terms of looking for starting points is to think about those coaching contexts or conversational contexts where coaching might help.
Yes.
And think about what would be the desired outcomes from those conversations. How would coaching help in those conversational contexts? And that often starts to open up a really rich discussion around that school's context.
I know Christian van Nieuwenberg asks this question: if coaching is the answer, what's the question? But, yes. And that's meant quite a bit to you, hasn't it?
It has. And again, that's often the question I come back to. And Christian's been kind enough to lend us that question
it's
in many different,
great line.
Different discussions. It's a great one. It's simple but very effective, a classic powerful coaching question, if you like. And I remember grappling with that in my own school context. So in my last school, when we grappled with that, and it does take a while, the question was around how we could facilitate more purposeful conversations about teaching practice, but with the caveat that had to be in a safe space. It was about how can we encourage teacher reflection and action.
Yes.
So we can talk about it, but how do we move to doing something different? And a really big one for us was really around that notion of knowing really well that traditional forms of PD, professional development, were often done to teachers rather than done with teachers. And it wasn't always around what their priorities were.
Yes.
So I was curious about how coaching might help us get more impact from, but also more discerning choices of people and teachers.
Yeah. So what are some of the factors that come into play here, Chris, considering the human organisational factors at work in a school setting in particular?
One thing we know really well in the work that we're, that I've, work I've done myself in my own previous schools, but also others that we work with, is that we have to take account of the context where this work is being done, because it's relational. We should really start by considering the human factors first.
Yes.
And really, when we talk about coaching, we are asking people, or we're creating a mechanism where teachers are invited and leaders are invited to think deeply and talk about their practice. And that notion, to some in itself, can be potentially threatening, but certainly confronting, because there aren't often that many situations where we're invited to do that. And sometimes that prevailing backdrop of performativity and measurement and judgment of teachers in some systems, or at least a teacher or a leader's previous experience of maybe, let's say, less positive and productive conversations in teaching about their practice, might not create the most receptive audience. So we really need to consider that background and baggage, if you like, first. And I think a key to that is to be very clear about our intent, and be very genuine about the follow through to demonstrate that the process, that actually the coaching process and those who are doing the coaching are trustworthy. So we really need to start with that human side of it, first of all.
Yeah.
But again, people only realize that once they've gone through the process. You can't just say, trust me.
Yes.
Trust me, I'm a coach. We've got to actually walk the talk.
And yeah.
To that's as leaders and as coaches. So that takes a bit of time.
And give them a bit of space to do it, I suppose.
Definitely. So that speaks to some of the organisational or practical kind of issues that we need to consider. You might think this sounds great, this sounds really empowering, hopefully we do. And these are professionalising conversations that we want teachers to be having. But on a practical level, creating the space or the opportunity for coaching is one of the challenges. It
yeah.
really is. It's, and I think the way around that is to start to consider coaching as a new form of professional learning. It's
yeah.
not. It's not an add-on. It's a way of doing things, and if it's seen as an add-on, you don't get much traction. So we need to address that. We need to address it very honestly.
You're listening to the Coaching in Education podcast. I'm in conversation with Chris Munro. So when Chris talks about being practical, what does a school need to do to kick off a coaching culture?
The word context comes up over and over again.
Yes.
And at the recent conference, we had in Melbourne a few months ago, that we were joking afterwards that that word context was probably the most used word in the whole 2 days, because everything we're talking about here has to be put against that backdrop in a school, in a situation, right down to the classroom level and peer-to-peer level. I'd maybe use a phrase here that my colleague, former school colleague Sophie Hunter, used in her case study presentation at the conference. And it really resonated with me and captured the issue here. She spoke about the need to consider the school's professional learning architecture. And that term, the professional learning architecture, really struck me, that this is a form of professional learning that sits in amongst everything else we do. When I did it in school, I would have called it the glue that holds all the other forms of professional learning together. There's lots of metaphors you could use, the analogies you could use. But to think then about how will coaching complement other approaches to teacher learning that you have already, to take a solution-focused approach and think about what's working already.
Yes.
What's helped when we've tried to change the way we've done things in the past? When has that worked, and what was it we did that helped that work, about how we work with people in the school? And we're talking about other things that often exist there already. It's the antecedent conditions, if you like, as well as that architecture. Do we have professional learning communities? How effectively do they operate? Do we already do peer observation? Are some classroom doors already open? And then on the back of that, what might we stop doing or do differently to create that space and opportunity to get coaching moving or identify starting points?
Yes. So what are the key pieces of advice you'd offer anyone looking to introduce coaching in their school? Just a few bullet points, Chris.
The notion of implementing coaching is context dependent. That's the biggest message. It sounds really obvious. Yeah, we often were doing these things. We go and visit other schools. We talk to others who've done it. We listen to a podcast. Yes. And we think that will give me the steps, the silver bullet to do this. The biggest learning for me in doing this and talking to other schools has been that you need to think about your own antecedent conditions. How do you know that to be true? And how might coaching help? That's the starting point. A few other points. Implementing coaching evolves in context over time, and I think that's a good thing. If you want it all to happen overnight, you think about the other innovations and changes you've made in school, that's probably not realistic. So as people experience the benefits of coaching, they start to see other opportunities to apply it, and so that notion of a culture starts to emerge.
Yeah.
The other big learning, and I learned this the hard way trying to do this in school, was that people learn most about coaching by experiencing it.
Yes.
As I said earlier, it isn't about saying, trust me, I'm a coach. Trust me, this is good for you. Trust me, this way, you will find this empowering. Expect people to jump on board. You'll always get early adopters and willing volunteers who do, and that's great. But people need to experience good coaching in order to get it. And the need for that good coaching is really important. So the last point I would make there is that other than that clarity of intent and authenticity being really essential and the trust and so on, but some form of training and some way of building your internal coaching resource that then helps to carry this forward is really, really important.
I'm sure you've seen this practically at work in so many contexts, to use that word again. Does any one particular context or person or school stand out for you? Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, the standout ones for me are the ones closest to me, I suppose, in my most recent experience. The last school I was in, I developed, along with colleagues, a coaching model. And as I've said, our starting point was around teacher practice and teacher classroom practice and so on. It was all voluntary to start with. So we looked for this coalition of the willing, and one of the people that jumped on board there was actually our e-learning leader, our digital learning leader in the school, very common position. And he's happy for me to use this example because he's now one of the biggest advocates of coaching in school. But he would freely admit that he came as, to say a cynic would be too strong, and he'd nudge me for saying that, a skeptic. But a dose of healthy skepticism, very experienced teacher, passionate about his work, but had seen lots of these things come and go in the past. And I was inviting involvement in a new way of talking about our practice and learning. And he thought there might be something in it. So we came along cautiously. Now, if you know e-learning in schools and those kinds of positions, they can very easily become Mr. or Mrs. Fix-It. You know, everybody comes to them with all their technical problems. And really, that's not the core of the role. The core of the role and his sense of frustration in his role when he came to coaching was around role clarity. It was around, how can I help people enhance teaching and learning in the classroom? he wanted to be seen more as a service to help people develop their practice rather than a fixer and a tech fixer.
Yes.
Well, he came to coaching and I actually coached him on that, on his role clarity, on how he would develop strategies to adopt a different stance. And on the back of that, part of his development was then to do more coaching training for himself. And long story short, this impacted on his own practice, but also on the practice around the school, because he started to adopt less of a fixer, instructor, trainer role in his e-learning role and developed more of a coaching role, where he asked more questions and gave less advice.
That's interesting.
He only gave advice when that was something that person genuinely needed to meet their goals and their learning. And it was a real change of stance and a real light bulb moment for him. So he went through, if you think about those portals, starting with his own practice, moving to changing his leadership stance and role through coaching. And then the biggest bit for me that makes this story a powerful one is that he then started seeing one of the other portals, the student wellbeing and engagement portal, creak open for him to the point where he came and asked permission and he got the response, why on earth are you asking permission? And use this coaching stuff with the students. And I thought, yes, you know, it's one of those moments where I thought, brilliant, this is what we mean by coaching culture. This is the first signs of what might be a coaching culture. He then started to apply coaching skills with his year 12 students because, again, he saw that conversational context and he saw how it might be improved by adopting a coaching stance where the students would take more ownership of their own learning and their own goals and so on. And that then started to spin out into student achievement, well-being and so on, talking to other staff. That story kind of embodies that notion of how those portals, once you start somewhere, it starts to creak open other portals. And there are lots of other stories of individual teachers coming at different stuff.
I mean, what a difference it's made to him and many people around him. It's another great story in our series.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you so much indeed for joining us. Chris Munro.
Thanks, Lee. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Coaching in Education podcast series. Check out some of our other great podcasts in this series. They are at www.growthcoaching.com.au.